Hi everyone, thanks so much for joining us today and welcome to our June 2018 webinar. My name is Mary Hyde and I'm the Director of the Office of Research and Evaluation at Corporation for National and Community Service. Our office's objectives are to support our agency's mission by building knowledge on civic engagement, volunteering, and national service. We conduct in-house research but also fund research through competitive grants to researchers, scholars, and dissertators at institutions of higher education and support research and evaluation of our programs and our grantees with other sources of support like those you're going to hear today. Our webinar series is one way we share our ongoing research and findings. Today, we are very excited to host another research and evidence webinar titled Using Evidence for Scaling Community-Based Interventions That Work. And I would like to acknowledge and thank all of the national service programs who are hard at work building that evidence base so that we can help improve lives and strengthen community conditions. We are also very excited to welcome members from the Federal Evidence and Evaluation Community of Practice who are both in the audience here at, on site with us and online today, and the webinar will serve as part of their workshop series. Because this is part of the series, we will keep the lines open until 3:30 instead of ending at 3. For those of you who have joined us in the past, we tend to not go that long, but today's a special occasion. Here with us today is Dr. Diana Epstein, who leads the evidence team at the Office of Management and Budget, and she will say a bit more about the workshop series. Diana?
Thanks, Mary. Pleasure to be here with you today, and I want to thank everyone at CNCS for allowing us to jump onto this webinar and co-brand it as part of our broader Evidence and Evaluation Community of Practice series. So the Evidence and Evaluation Community of Practice is a sort of informal group that we run. Our team at OMB coordinates, and the goal is to really engage folks from across the federal government, from evaluation offices, research offices, analytics offices, pretty much anyone who's interested in efforts to build and use evidence for decision making. With, you know, a particular focus on program evaluation. So we do a couple things. We run a MAC site that has a bunch of resources, both the formal sort of OMB directives as well as resources that other agencies have produced. It also serves as a collaborative workspace for some of the interagency groups that have evaluation as a central component. We also are running trainings like this, workshops, about once a month. So the way we've been doing this over the past year or so is we rotate through. We have a different agency host every month, both on site and then also hopefully having a webinar component for those who are not able to attend in person. So I'd really encourage you all to check out the MAC site, Federal Evaluation Evidence and Evaluation Community of Practice, and hopefully join some of our events in the future. And just a plug for our team as well, we're here as a support unit, so we're here to support you. If you or others at your agency would like to reach out to us, we are more than happy to offer support.
Great. Thank you, Diana, and welcome to all of you on the line and in the room. Before I move into introducing our speakers, we'd like to cover a few housekeeping items, as this is the second webinar we are hosting using our new platform, Adobe Connect. So with that, I will turn it over to Emily.
All right, thank you for everyone joining us online using Adobe Connect. We want to let you know that this webinar will be recorded and posted online following the presentation. Unlike previous webinars, there's no dial-in phone line. All audio will be broadcast over the internet using your computer speakers. All participants online will be in listen-only mode until the Q&A session following the presentations, at which time you can ask a question using your computer's microphone. We ask that you ask the question directly into your computer's microphone, as that will give us the best sound quality. You can also ask questions at any time during the presentation using the Q&A and the chat boxes below. And as I mentioned earlier, this webinar is recorded, and if you have any questions or experience technical difficulties, please let us know in the chat box. I believe that takes care of all of our housekeeping items.
Thank you. So let me introduce our speakers today. We're going to begin with a few introductory comments from Dr. Lily Vanyapour, who is a research and evaluation manager here at CNCS and who has been developing and championing the evidence base at CNCS. We are also going to be hearing from Anthony Norino, who is a research analyst here at CNCS, and he oversees the analysis and reporting of the national volunteering and civic engagement data, as well as leading the scaling project here at the corporation. In addition, we have Nan Maxwell and Scott Richmond joining us from Mathematica Policy Research. Nan Maxwell is a senior researcher with more than 30 years of experience in conducting basic and applied research. She has extensive experience in survey research and has served as a principal investigator for numerous randomized controlled trial and quasi-experimental design impact studies of programs designed to prepare youth for successful careers and post-secondary education. Also to help at-risk groups, such as the homeless, parolees, those with mental illness, and opportunity youth, gain employment and life stability. She has worked with an array of clients, including federal, state, and local governments, nonprofit organizations with missions to improve employment or education outcomes, and for-profit organizations scaling promising interventions in a community. Scott Richmond is a survey researcher with diverse experience in several key areas, including education, family support, and early childhood, and has extensive experience in directing data collection activities for evaluation studies. He is also an expert in developing systematic review processes and synthesizing the results for a broad audience. Having served as a project director for systematic review projects funded by foundations and nonprofit organizations who are interested in improving youth and community well-being. We will conclude after these speakers share with us their knowledge with a few concluding remarks. After the remarks, we will open up the discussion for Q&A. During the webinar, please feel free to ask any questions or provide comments in the chat box. At this point, I will hand it over to Dr. Lily Zanyapour.
Thank you, Mary. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. Before our guests begin their presentations, Anthony and I are going to give you some context for today's discussion and some background about the journey that got us to this point. Just a little bit about the agency. The Corporation for National and Community Service, as many of you know, is a key funder of the nonprofit sector, and its mission is to improve lives, strengthen communities, and foster civic engagement through service and volunteering. The agency's flagship programs include AmeriCorps, Volunteers in Service to America, or VISTA, Senior Corps, and National Civilian Community Corps, or NCCC. These programs provide an opportunity for thousands of Americans of all ages and backgrounds to serve their country each year. The Edward M. Kennedy Serve America Act reauthorized the agency in 2009 and expanded national service programs. The act stipulated that CNCS and its grantees support programs in six focus areas, as you see on the slide. In addition to these six focus areas, the agency has focused efforts on organizational capacity building as well. CNCS programs really work in a variety of areas, diverse areas covering rural and urban areas. Thank you. I just wanted to say a few words about sort of measurement, particularly output and outcomes. CNCS programs have used performance measures since the inception of the agency. These performance measures have been periodically updated, most recently in 2008 as part of the then current strategic planning process. With regard to impact, however, there were few, if any, rigorous evaluations done prior to that point. Over the past decade, and in particular following the signing of the Serve America Act, CNCS began to more intentionally organize and develop an evidence base for national service programs, and it increased its focus on evaluation, evidence building, and use. Both the agency and the grantees, I want to acknowledge both of them, have invested significant resources in evaluation of their interventions and programs during this period. One of the things that really served as a catalyst for this evidence, focus on evidence, was that the legislation called for the implementation of the Social Innovation Fund, which is a tiered evidence-based initiative, part of several of these across the federal agency. And this particular program really had evidence of effectiveness baked in its DNA. It was the aim and the mission of that program was to scale what works. And so that program really served as a catalyzer in the agency. Sort of as an, I want to say as a, an evidence that the agency itself is a learning organization. AmeriCorps, the agency's largest program, has since become much more evidence-driven. For example, it's adopted a similar tiered evidence framework. It's implemented evaluation requirements based on funding levels. and it increases weight on evidence for grant review process. It's developed and rolled out evidence-based planning grants. So a whole lot has been happening with our largest program around evidence. Senior Core, another one of our key programs, has also started offering augmentation grants so that grantees can implement evidence-based programs. In addition to all of that, most of our programs, in specific, I want to call out CIF and Senior Core, as well as AmeriCorps, have undergone impact evaluations at the funding stream level. And they've been put through rigorous impact evaluations. As sort of this agency's use of evidence and focus on third-party evaluations and systematic evidence reviews has sort of expanded, a sort of body of evidence has started emerging. And in order to better understand it, we started commissioning metasynthesis, meta-analysis types of studies to really put our sort of grasp what's been going on and what we were learning about the evidence base of the program. At the same time, go to the next slide. We've tried to share a lot of what we've learned on our website. Evidence Exchange is a repository where a lot of our evaluation and research reports are housed. They have expanded our evaluation resources, and all of those can be tapped on the website. We're moving in the direction of trying to make a lot of these more self-paced and more interactive over time. And finally, we've produced this 2017 State of Evidence Report, where we've tried to really provide a summary of what we've learned so far around our evidence. Next slide, please. With sort of that as a backdrop, our vision going forward is really to leverage all these investments we've done to date. Our hope is to take what works and bring it to more people across different communities nationwide. And our hope is to sort of use national service to support that expansion and growth. And to do that, we wanted to sort of develop further our knowledge base about what works and how that can be scaled up. So with that, I'm going to pass it on to Anthony to give you more of an overview of this particular project.
Thank you, Lily. In 2016, the Office of Research and Evaluation contracted with Mathematical Policy Research to conduct a multi-year, multi-component learning project that could move us closer to our goal. The project is designed to deepen our understanding of agencies' most effective evidence-based innovations and to expand the agencies and its grantees' knowledge base on how to successfully scale them. The project aims to answer a number of critical questions. Which CNCS-supported interventions and components demonstrate the strongest evidence of effectiveness? How do CNCS-funded organizations define and operationalize scaling? How do they ensure they're scaling their programs with fidelity? And the extent and reasons why they may adapt or modify the program? What facilitates or hinders the scaling process? And finally, what does scaling readiness at the organizational program and intervention level look like? As part of the project, we want to develop policies and practice guidelines and technical assistance for materials for CNCS and its grantees. This is knowledge that can inform the path forward for those thinking of scaling their interventions. To date, the project has generated a synthesis and analysis of the existing and emerging evidence gleaned from evaluation reports, and the next phase will include in-depth case studies or process evaluations of a select group of grantees to capture their experiences around scaling using a scaling readiness framework. In addition to these in-depth studies, we also hope to draw on a broader set of experts to gather insight on the topic. Consequently, we plan to put together a field working group, potentially comprising project directors, researchers, federal grant makers, and foundation staff. And it's our hope that we are able to share these learnings beyond the agency and its grantees with the larger grant-making and nonprofit community. With that, I want to introduce and turn over our presentation to Scott Richmond and Nan Maxwell from Mathematica. And thank you for being here.
Thank So as Anthony mentioned, Mathematica has been working with CNCS over the past year and a half on the Scaling Evidence-Based Models project in an effort to generate practical knowledge on how CNCS might foster the successful scaling of effective interventions. Anthony and Lily provided a nice overview of the different project components and how they align to the project's overall goals. But our presentation today will focus on the evidence and scaling activity review components and the processes we developed to execute these tasks. Next slide, please. The evidence and scaling plan review components can best be thought of as different sections of a larger pipeline, which are represented by the two different shades of blue in the graphic. The first part of the pipeline is designed to identify the CNCS-funded interventions with evidence of effectiveness. That is, interventions that have been found through rigorous research to improve the outcomes for individuals receiving the intervention services. The second part of the pipeline is designed to learn the extent to which grantee organizations demonstrate a readiness to scale these interventions. So by working to identify the interventions with evidence of effectiveness and their readiness for scaling, this project will help support CNCS's efforts to identify which interventions work and how to make them work for more people. So I'll be discussing the first part of the pipeline, which focuses on the evidence review, while Nan will be discussing the second part, which is based on the review of the grantee's scaling plans. I'll note that while the project is also designed to help CNCS and its grantees to strengthen their capacity to build evidence and a readiness to scale, we won't be discussing that piece during the presentation today. Next slide. So the first section of the pipeline for identifying interventions with evidence of effectiveness is to collect and categorize the current evidence that exists for interventions that are of potential interest. This evidence can be identified through various avenues, such as evaluations sponsored by federal agencies, funding opportunity requirements where applicants must submit evidence as part of their application process, and then evidence review clearinghouses that compile evidence and then review them against evidence quality standards. For this project, we use the evidence that CNCS compiled through its Notice of Funding Opportunity evidence requirements and also the evaluations that CNCS grantees must perform as part of their funding requirements from the agency. But because the quality of evidence can vary, it's important to then categorize that evidence, such as how CNCS uses its evidence-tiered framework to rate the quality of evidence for the interventions it supports. CNCS contracts with third-party evaluators to review grantee evidence documents based on the research methods that are used, and then provide an evidence rating that can range from pre-preliminary to strong. An example of one of the categories, preliminary, would be a study that looks at the credit scores of individuals before and after they receive a financial literacy program, but the study would not have also included a comparison group to compare that treatment group to. The moderate and strong ratings are evidence that is generated from studies that use more rigorous research designs, such that if done well, they would provide a greater sense of confidence that the intervention caused any differences between the between the treatment and comparison groups. So an example of these sorts of studies would be a study that examines children's healthy eating habits among those who are assigned to receive a school lunch initiative program and comparing them to a similar group of children who were not assigned to receive that program. So for this project, the interventions we initially considered for our review were those that had evidence with a moderate or strong rating. So the next step of the pipeline is to identify the evidence that aligns to the project's research questions. Because our project was interested in how CNCS's grantees plan to scale effective interventions, we developed screening criteria to identify which evidence used more rigorous research designs, evidence that showed consistently favorable results, and aligned to the scaling activities that grantees had for their planned interventions. The evidence that met these criteria would then move on to the next phase of the pipeline, where we would take a more in-depth look at the quality of the evidence itself. So the first set of criteria we developed pertain to the design, the reporting, and the objectivity of the evidence submitted by the CNCS grantees. So for example, we wanted evidence that used a comparison group in its study design to get a better understanding of what would have happened to the treatment group had they not received the intervention. We also needed details on the study design and methods to get a better sense of whether the study was using adequate procedures when implementing the design that they had in place. The next criteria we developed is the need for the evidence documents to have consistently favorable impact findings for the program participants. And this is done because as a prerequisite to successfully scaling an intervention, there needs to be some underlying evidence that intervention was successful to begin with. And then the last criterion we developed in this at this stage was that grantees needed to have submitted evidence for the specific intervention that they sought to scale. So, for example, a grantee planning to scale a specific parenting education program needed to have submitted evidence for that specific program itself, and not just any parent education program as a general proof of concept that this approach could work. So for the last step of this part of the pipeline, we assessed the quality of the evidence based on the internal validity criteria we established, which were informed by standards developed by existing evidence review clearinghouses. These internal validity criteria provide greater confidence that any differences between a group of individuals receiving the intervention and a group that did not could be attributed to the intervention itself and not to other factors. In order to have confidence that the intervention caused any differences between the treatment and comparison groups at the end of the intervention, you first have to know whether these groups were similar to each other before the intervention began. You want groups that were equal to each other at the start of the intervention so that you know you're comparing apples to apples, and that the only difference between the groups at the start of the study is that one of them received the intervention. If you don't have this, then you can't be certain that any outcome differences assessed at the end of the intervention was due to the intervention itself, or maybe some pre-existing differences that the groups had before the intervention even began. So to help make sure that the studies we reviewed were not comparing apples to oranges, we developed specific criteria to address issues that can arise and threaten a study's internal validity. These issues can include losing a large number of sample participants over the course of the study, switching participants from one group to another after the intervention has already begun, or not showing that the final treatment and comparison groups were similar to each other before the start of the intervention. So the fourth criterion we developed is about identifying whether there were other factors embedded within the study design, also known as study design confounds, that could otherwise explain the outcome differences between the intervention and comparison groups. So at this stage of our broader pipeline, interventions that had evidence meeting the project's quality standards were then considered as having evidence of their effectiveness. We then reviewed the planned scaling activities that CNCS grantees had for these specific interventions, which Nan will speak to next.
Thanks, Scott. Before discussing the scaling portion of the pipeline, we really need to define scaling. And as Lily pointed out, we are discussing three different types of scaling. We're looking at expansion, that is serving more people in the same location. We're looking at replication, so that you're serving the same population but at a different location. And then we're looking at adaption, that is serving a different population or modifying the intervention for the same population. Now, we note that when scaling an intervention, differences often emerge between the intervention as it was designed and the intervention that's actually planned to be scaled. Furthermore, there's differences that likely arise between the intervention that was implemented and the evaluation of it or the planned scaling of it. Now, these are really important differences, and don't want to minimize it with these differences with my next statement, but we're going to ignore them right now. And, you know, for the sake of brevity, and when we talk about the intervention and scaling the intervention, we're just going to talk about the intervention as it was designed, or the intervention model, so to speak. So in order to look at the scaling readiness for the interventions that Scott identified as being having evidence, we really need to develop a framework. So Mathematica developed a framework for looking at interventions and organizations and implement them and determining whether or not they're ready to be scaled. So the framework, as you can see it on the slide, identifies five different conditions of readiness to scale. The first three, well-specified intervention, well-defined target population, and implementation support, allow us to assess whether the intervention is ready to scale. The last two conditions, enabling context and implementation infrastructure, allow us to assess whether the organization is ready to scale the intervention. And we'll go through each of these conditions in turn. So the first condition is the intervention being well specified. And having a well-specified intervention means that the intervention is described in sufficient detail to make clear what activities are crucial, and then describes details, actually behavioral descriptions of those activities to ensure that they can be implemented as they were intended. So I like to think about this as like a recipe. You enjoy a cake and ask for the recipe. And someone can say, oh, it's made with butter, eggs, flour, sugar, milk. That's great. But without the details about those ingredients and how you put them together, you're unlikely to be able to replicate that cake. So just like the cake, CNCF grantees will not be insured of successfully scaling an intervention without it being well specified. And this means that grantees should have a clear sense of not only what those key activities are, but also each one of these elements about those core components or key activities. You know, how is the activity to be delivered, mode of delivery? Must it be in person? Can technology substitute for in person? Can there be a combination of the two? How intense? How much of the component must a participant receive? How long should the activity last? How often should it be undertaken? And then how much of it should a participant get? What staff are needed to implement the activity effectively? And this is really critical for CNCF, because knowing what kind of staff are needed helps them match volunteers appropriately to the service opportunities out there. You have to know what setting the activity will work best in. And setting includes both location, like rural or urban area kind of thing. And it also includes venue. Is the implementation designed to unfold, is the activity designed to unfold in a park, at home, in a school, in a classroom, whatever. So these all need to be defined for each activity. And then finally, the intervention needs to define the requirements for being considered a participant and a completer. And although each of those activities or core components might improve outcomes for some individuals, it's the combination of them, it's the taking it together that really the designer had in mind when developing the intervention. It's that combination that will make the outcomes happen. Next slide. The second component of scaling readiness is that the intervention defines the target population. Now, each intervention is designed to work for a certain population, say the low income, say kids in grades 2 and 3. You know, it might not work on other populations. Which means that the target population has to be clearly identified. Now, of note in that description of the target population, it also has to include any criteria for including that people must have in order to enroll in the intervention, or criteria that would exclude them. You know, for example, a program might be designed to include only youth that were at least age 18, but younger than age 25. The third component is that the intervention has to have supports for its implementation. And these supports ensure that the intervention can be implemented in the way it was designed. And there's 6 different types of support that are needed. The first is that the intervention needs to have a team, or at least an individual, who is responsible for monitoring it to ensure that it's implemented successfully and that problems are identified as they arise. The second type of support is that the intervention needs to specify performance procedures for staff that provide benchmarks for them to meet when delivering the intervention. The third is that the intervention needs to have continuous quality improvement to ensure that quality is maintained while it's being implemented or scaled. The fourth is that the intervention needs to clearly identify the training that staff will need to implement it with quality. The fifth, the intervention needs to have clearly identified lines of communication so that both staff and partners have the knowledge about operations in order to effectively implement. And then finally, the intervention needs to be supported by data systems that provide information about participants and the intervention per se so that decision making can be effective. Now, let's switch over to what the organization needs to have in place in order to be ready to scale an intervention. First, and maybe not foremost, but certainly first, is that leaders and stakeholders must be on board with the scaling. And partners are one of those stakeholders there. These individuals have to provide support. They have to promote the intervention and its scaling efforts, and certainly not put up roadblocks to it. Second, the organization must have a culture that supports both the intervention and its scaling. And what this means is that the organization values innovation, learning, moving forward. It also means that improvements are made in responses to challenges encountered, and there will be challenges encountered. That's a given. And the organization has to have an attitude of, we will conquer these challenges, we will overcome them, we will improve and move forward and not give up. And finally, the organization has to have a supporting infrastructure. Now, what does this mean? It means that in scaling, it has to have sufficient financial resources, it has to have sufficient staff, materials, physical space, so that it can scale. It also has to have a human resource system that supports staff selection, training, and ongoing supervision. Okay, next slide. And finally, let's just close the loop that Anthony started, I don't know, 15 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago. The project's been going on for about a year and a half, and we've really made some tremendous progress, although on any given day. Specifically, we've reviewed and evaluated research evidence from CNCS grantees that has allowed us to identify interventions that CNCS funds that have demonstrated effectiveness. Then we've also, as you've heard, developed a framework by which to identify interventions and organizations that are ready to be scaled. We've applied the conditions for scaling to say which effective interventions and organizations might be ready to scale, you know. And then we've selected organizations that are currently scaling effective interventions for in-depth study, the case studies that Anthony talked about. So the next, what's coming up? Preview here. In the next few years, we're going to continue the learning and knowledge development here. We're going to conduct an in-depth study of those selected organizations to understand their scaling. We're going to use that information that we gather from these case studies to identify the factors that challenge and facilitate scaling. And then we're going to disseminate findings widely to a wide variety of audiences. We really, really, really want CNCS and its grantees to make practical use of the research. You know, the goal is to foster successful scaling of, you know, effective interventions. And with that comes improved lives, strengthened communities, and better civic engagement. Next slide. And finally, you know, I'm giving some prompts here for Q&A. You know, you've heard our thinking about evidence and scaling, and we're real curious about your thoughts about what's going on out there. So, you know, during the Q&A period, we're hoping that you can think about and provide discussion on what role does evidence play in your organization? And what indicators does your organization use to determine if it's ready to scale? So with those thoughts, I'll turn it back to Mary.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Do Anthony or Lily have any additional comments?
I just want to say thank you for the presentation and for the work you've done on this project. And I want to highlight that this project and a number of other projects, but this one in particular, has really been the result of a whole group of people coming together and thinking about it both in the moment and over time. And Diana Epstein was a factor in bringing this project to light. I've had the pleasure of working with Scott and Mann on getting this implemented, and Lily's been tremendously valuable to me in terms of insight for scaling from her experience with SIF. So I just want to point out that, you know, that collective effort really kind of shines a light on the notion that as we move forward, we're really developing a very visible notion as a learning agency, that we're taking the information that we get and we're looking at it in terms of where it applies and what more information is needed for us to make very conscious decisions about where we go and what we do, both with national service and generally with a lot of our grant making. So thank you.
Great, thank you. Before we open this up to Q&A, I would also like to introduce Amy Didlow, our program examiner within the Education, Income Maintenance, and Labor Division at the Office of Management and Budget. We really appreciate you being here today, and I would like to give you the floor for any comments you'd like.
Yeah, thank you first and foremost to our exit panel, the Corporation for CNCS for allowing me to be here. You know, something you said, Anthony, about CNCS being a learning agency, that really speaks to the President's Management Agenda that was released in March of this year. Specifically, the objective of federal government for the 21st century will be to provide high quality and timely information to inform evidence-based decision-making and learning. So that is, you know, the objective of the administration writ large, but then also just as, you know, great stewards of taxpayer dollars going into the future. So that said, we totally support CNCS and are looking forward to working with you and supporting your efforts.
Great, thank you so much. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Q&A, and I think Andrea will sort of help us walk through how that works with the technology, as well as folks in the room, because we want your thoughts.
Well, we're going to try it.